Let's talk. John Brown.
I've been looking forward to doing this next interview for about 2 weeks. Peter Wenczyrski began his work as a journalist in 1979 with reports from the GDR. He's a documentary filmmaker, and he's written a fascinating book into his quest for freedom. It's called Generation GDR, Truth, Freedom, and One Man's Last Journey. I'm delighted to say that joining me live on the line now is Peter himself. Peter, good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
Good to have you. Whereabouts are you, by the way? Where do we find you this morning?
Well, I'm fine. I'm just working on a new book, but this book is very important for me, and I think for all who are hearing of this book.
Yes, indeed. So, what? Tell me a little about the story behind this book. You know, the main character or the main person.
Yeah, that's a young boy, 22 years old. And for me, the most important thing, the GDR was a country that disappeared like the Soviet Union, but which many people wishes back in our country and in Europe. Some people, a lot of people, too much people, they remember it as a something socialist, as a more just society, but the GDR was in truth a violent society for anyone who refused to submit or conform, especially young people like Matthias. And let me tell you one story. While researching for Generation GDR for the book, I found a police document about young people living together in a house in the town of Jena. It said in this document, these young people have their own idea of freedom and want to make it reality. That's what we must fight them as enemies of the state. This is precisely what is happening in many countries around the world today. Ukraine was attacked because it wanted to realize its idea of freedom. The Russian leader Vladimir Putin spent many years in the GDR as an intelligence officer. Putin learned at that time, and this is what I describe in the book, to fight against people who wanted to realize their idea of freedom and democracy.
Now, here's the thing, Peter, because it's really interesting that you say, people want to go back to East Germany because everybody had a job and you didn't have to work. So there was no unemployment. You know, everybody had a Trabant or something like that. And in the same way in Spain, we see people saying, but when Franco was running the country, you know, there was no immigration. It was much easier. Everybody had a job. It's very interesting how people look back with mistakenly at the past and think that the past, it was always better. And because, you know, they think our democracy doesn't work. And you know, the German Democratic Republic was one of the most, if you were in East Germany, you had the most surveillance from the Stasi than anywhere else possibly in Europe.
Yes, so is it. And let me tell you, Matthias fought a battle that still defines our world today for freedom and democracy against a dictatorship. While researching his life and that of his friends, it was repeatedly made clear to me his fate demonstrates where enemy stereotypes, hatred of those who think differently, and the division of a society into friends and enemies can lead. And at first I thought it was a key story for the freedom-loving youth of this generation in the early 70s in East and West Europe. Well, you must know, Matthias was one of these.
He had a group, didn't he? His name was Matthias. Is it Don?
Yes, it's important to know I wrote the book based on the last days, yes. the last 3 days of Matthias. But the book tells the whole story of a non-conformist youth in a communist dictatorship. And it paints a picture of a new generation long after World War II. This generation did not want to live like her parents, but try new ways. They dressed differently. They wear long hair. They listen to the music that comes from Great Britain and America. Beatles, Kings, Doors, Stones, Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix. They read popular books that are forbidden in the GDR, in communist countries, secretly imported by friends in Western countries. They celebrated parties, hitchhiked abroad the country, smelling a bit of this freedom, wildlife. They read all the book on the road and also found themselves in strong conflicts with their conformist parents and intolerant citizens.
But you see, they are having these arguments, and I mean, remember when we were young, it was always, we were going to change the world, Peter, you know, that's part of the youth, and you rebel against your parents. And, you know, if you do that, you know, like I was doing in the 80s, you know, when I was living in England, you know, you had, I was living under a Thatcher, and we went, oh, it's a terrible government. In East Germany, there was a really terrible government, and you know, Matthias goes to a birthday party, gets on a train, and he is never seen again. And that just shows how serious this was.
Yes, I spoke with a lot of friends, 200 people. I have spoken to 200 people for this book, his friends, but I spoke even to the Stasi agents. The book is written in a multi-perspective way. Mm-hmm. That means that the story is told from the perspective of the young Matthias and his friends and from the perspective and knowledge of the Stasi employees. There are sections where we visit Matthias' father, his parents, in their apartment, and others where we spend the night with the transport police in GDR or special police control at the railway stations. So the book also explores the question, what drove some men to become tools of a dictatorship? What do they think about it today? What were their biographical stages? This look behind the scenes.
That's really interesting because I was going to ask what happens to all those people of members of the Stasi. You know, I mean, we are now at the 80th anniversary of the end of the war in Europe, and we know that in West Germany, you know, not everybody could be charged if they were part of the state, you know, at the end of the war, because there were too many people. In East Germany, when the wall comes down and Germany becomes reunified, what happens to the little informants? I mean, we know Honecker flees or whatever, but what happens to the policemen, the East German policemen? What happens to those people, Peter?
Well, there are 16 million people, inhabitants in the GDR, and 2 million are in the Socialist Party. More than 100,000 are employed by Stasi.
Yeah.
I ask myself again and again who the people are who participate in such systems even today. Those who support dictatorships, beat down demonstrants, or work for the Secret Service. I have an interesting encounters with a lot of Stasi people. Too little has happened there in the last 30 years. Of almost 100,000 full-time Stasi employees, very few has talked about their job, less than 10. Many of them are still living among us, but not even their neighbors know anything about it. We should have talked more to them to understand and learn from the history. I talked to 30 of them, and it was very interesting. And is all this I wrote into the book. And when many of them still have the same mentality, they want back an authoritarian state, they reject democracy, they reject Western systems, and they have often passed this on to their children in their families. The election results in East Germany reflect this.
Yes, because I suppose with the education system, with the education system, they've known nothing but the East German education, which is the West is degenerate, you know, communism is the true path, this, you know, that is the way to. And so therefore, although, you know, and we remember 1989 and East Germans walking down, you know, the main street past the Brandenburg and being amazed by the BMW garage and the Mercedes garage. But now this is seen 35 years later, almost 40 years later, that people can say, ah, but you see, they were wrong, and the West was degenerate, and therefore, this is why you're seeing that voting pattern in the East with the authoritarianism of the elections.
Mm. Yes, it's. I wanted to understand why there are always people who make themselves tools of a dictatorship, convinced that they are on the right side, on the better side, and doing something profoundly justified. What kind of people are these? What is wrong with them? Why do people, historically speaking, become perpetrators? Is there anything we can learn from this about how to break through this? So. This is one of the reasons I find the story of Matthias is one of the most important stories we can tell from the GDR, from a communistic, socialistic state. And on one level, the book takes place on just few days, on Friday, Saturday, Sunday in April 81.
Yeah.
Yet on another level, all the years prior are described because I tell a great deal about Matthias' colorful life.
Yeah.
And the lives of his friends in flashbacks. And then there's a third level. Two people bought the train to Berlin, Matthias and his friend, excited about a birthday party, while in the background, an insane police and secret service apparatus is being built up. That's why I alternate between the perspectives of the young man in the train and the Stasi and police district offices in several towns. They stopped an express train, the whole train, with hundreds of people traveling from Thuringia to Berlin with Matthias and his friends,
yeah,
just to get two people who were going to a birthday party because they had completely different suspicions. One could even say delusional notions of a threat.
That's the thing. They live in East Germany and they are taught that East Germany is consistently under threat from the West. And therefore we must have this security. We must have this surveillance and we must, anybody like Matthias, who is suspected of, you know, he's not a terrorist. He's not taking a weapon, is he? What effect does the death of on his disappearance have on his friends? Do they become more militant or do they become frightened and go into the background, Peter?
It's a story about one state against two young people,
yeah,
and all their friends. And I think Matthias has dreams of an alternate society with dreams full of freedom, more freedom than the GDR offers to young people. And they want to change the system. And it was an illusion. The system cannot be changed inside because the men who had the power in the GDR, they had the power without free votings. They got the power from the Soviet tanks in 1945, and they built up the state against a lot of people because they... it's a socialist, kind of socialist dictatorship. In the early years, they were more they were more powerful with violence.
Yep.
They killed persons in the 15th, in the 16th.
Well, the uprising in East Germany after the war, which is pushed. Yeah.
Yeah, but so many people in Germany and in other countries have illusions that it may be a better society, a socialist society, and it's hard to take to lose this dream of a lot of people when you see the reality. And I describe the reality of the GDR in those time, and you see it actually in today. The reality is another one. The reality is that Putin, who has been working in the GDR, Now,
I think that's all you need to say, Peter, with that. Is this book, when you look, Peter, when you look at the situation now and you look at the terrible thing that happened to Mateus and the rise of more authoritarianism group, are you optimistic about the future for Germany? Are you worried? Is this book a warning to say, hey, stop, because that you have the wrong idea? What is your thought, Peter? What is the thought of the book?
The thought of the book is, I want to tell how it really has been in the GDR, how it really has been inside. It's a great look inside, behind the phrases, behind the parallels. I've written the book like, I described it like a film. You can feel as you sit beside Matthias when I describe what he and his friends doing and how they get in conflicts with this system. I've been a journalist since 1978 and I traveled extensively in the GDR every few days, often for longer periods. I live in the correspondence apartment in East Berlin for a time. I could cross the border without being checked like a diplomat. That is normal for correspondence. I was in my early 20s and I had many contacts with younger people, people who belonged to the scene, to the generation of Matthias. That was familiar to me. Things were developing there in the first years of 18th. There was a colorful life to discover behind the seemingly gray facade of the GDR. Of course, it was fun to celebrate with them, get to know people and their stories. I feel at that time we share responsibility for peace in Europe, for environmental problems, and for the history we shared, the old fascism. I was exciting to create publicity in a society that actually wanted to prevent publicity. I considered that more important than being just another journalist in West Germany. And so it's very important for me to write this book. And I think we can learn a lot of the inside of these systems. I'm optimistic and for the future, because all the dictators pass away one time, but not from alone. We have to work hard for this goal that dictatorships and authoritarian systems don't exist. But I'm optimistic, yes.
And if nothing else, it keeps the memory of one brave young man, of course, that of Matthias, alive and immortal, if you like. So that is congratulations.
One sentence more. Matthias' friends, after his death, make demonstration. It grows and it finally ends in 1989 in the revolution of the autumn 89. Yeah. And the death of Matthias in 81 is a very, very important signal for the end of the GDR.
The book is called Generation GDR, Truth, Freeman, and One Man's Last Journey. Listeners, you can order it via our own virtual bookstore. I urge you to. It is by Peter Wenczyski. Peter, thank you so much for your time today. It's been an absolute honor to speak to you this morning.
Thank you for being with you.